Hey everybody, and welcome to the January 22nd episode of XV Extras. This is, again, a new podcast brought to you by me, Blake Chastain, and Xvangelical. This is a daily podcast of sorts that focuses on stories relevant to the Xvangelical community, covering things like religion news and other items of interest and discussion on a given day or series of dates. Today's episode features two interviews, one with Laura Hagen and another with Chris Stroop, in regards to discussions over the long weekend about exposed Christian schools and exposed Christian homeschooling. These hashtags were developed and promoted by Chris Stroop as a way to respond to the criticism brought against the Second Lady and Mike Pence in regards to Karen Pence's decision to start teaching at a discriminatory Christian school. That hashtag then started to trend on Twitter, receiving over 150,000 individual tweets over the course of a couple of days, and has really started to upset a number of people on the religious right in regards to how Christian schools have been portrayed. That is why this is an important discussion and why I'm bringing these two interviews to you today. The first interview you're going to hear is from Laura Hagen. Laura is someone that wrote a viral tweet that she tagged me and Chris into and received a couple of thousand retweets, and it detailed how her Christian school had a practice known as Slave Day. This conversation does involve two white people talking about race, so please, you know, have that caveat in mind. It's not always the most beneficial thing to always hear that, especially when it's done in the context of not including people of color in that conversation or you know, centering the white experience. But one of the things that white evangelicals and people that are white that come from evangelical communities have to do is to start to reckon with the racist undertones of white evangelicals. And part of that is by talking through these things and understanding the experiences we've had and learning from them and turning away from them. So that is what this conversation entails. That's really the only sort of preface I'd like to say before we get to that. And then you'll hear a short break, and then you will also hear a conversation with Chris Stroop. This is going to be a little longer of an episode than what will usually be featured in this feed, but I hope that you enjoy both discussions. I have with me on the phone Laura Hagen. She is someone who responded recently to the Twitter hashtag that was started by Chris Stroop called Expose Christian Schools. And Laura tagged both Chris and I into a tweet that went viral. And I wanted to talk to her a little bit more about her experience at a Christian school. Welcome to the show, Laura.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thanks for agreeing to speak. There was a hashtag that went viral over the weekend called Expose Christian Schools, and you posted something that caught a lot of people about this this practice that was done at your school called Slave Day. Can you describe what that is and what your tweet was alluding to?
Yeah, so it's kind of crazy how it took off. I was not anticipating that. So I went to a private Christian non-denominational school. I started there in first grade and then graduated from there in 2006. And every year that I can remember, there was an event called Slave Day, and it was a fundraiser, strictly a fundraiser, for the junior class, because the junior class each year planned our version of a prom, which was just a dinner that you dressed up for. And what would happen was each member of the junior class was auctioned off and paid for with real money. And whoever had the highest bid owned that person for a day. It was a designated day that we would all participate in. And it happened in the chapel. And then I think eventually once we got our own building, it moved to the gymnasium. But students would stand on like a box and a teacher would be the auctioneer. And I did find pictures of the whip that people were pretty hung up on in the tweet. But yeah, it was bizarre looking back on it, just kind of like, how in the world was that allowed? It did in, I think around 2001 or 2002, it was changed to Servant Day. But it was only a change in name. Everything else stayed the same, and we kept calling it Slave Day as students.
And just to understand sort of the makeup of your school, what was the predominantly, was it a predominantly white school, and where was this located?
Yeah, so it's Bethany Academy. It's in Bloomington, Minnesota, which is a suburb of Minneapolis. It was a very small school. I think I graduated with, I think there was 23 of us in my graduating class, and it was mostly white, almost exclusively. I remember one black student from my time in high school, and then the other people of students of color, I remember being Asian, but there was maybe a handful, so...
And was this sort of event, I mean, was it sort of how, I mean, I understand the perils of two white people talking about race, and how, but one of the things that people coming out of white evangelicalism sort of have to understand and come to terms with as white people themselves is they're what they were taught and not taught about race and racism. So within that context, what sort of teachings were there around race and racism? Was this symptomatic of sort of the teachings about race at your school?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a really important question, because as far as like individual acts of racism or discrimination, like I don't recall any towards people of color outside of Slave Day, which is pretty egregious, right, but and very explicit. I don't remember any individual acts. That said, we didn't really have students of color, so there wasn't opportunity either. When looking through yearbooks, as I was trying to find pictures of Slave Day, I noticed that we had Spirit Week, I think twice a year, and we always had a hip hop day, because apparently we all really enjoyed dressing up as stereotypical black people, which is weird. So there was that, and then Slave Day. Aside from those two events, I do not recall ever having conversations about race. It is almost absent from my memory. And I, as I've been processing the first 18 years of my life over the last decade, I've realized that like I just didn't have to think about my whiteness. I didn't have to think about what that meant. I didn't have to think about what I was being robbed of by not having relationships with people of color. Like it was just absent. So I wasn't taught that, you know, I was taught that racism is bad, and I was not taught that racism is a structure, not just individual acts. And so I think white supremacy was very much prevalent And it's shown in the fact that we didn't have to talk about it. We didn't have to confront our whiteness and how we were participating in institutional racism.
Yeah. Yeah, that's all very, very well said, and makes me think and sort of wonder what other sorts of things, just broadening from this one really egregious event that you detailed in the tweet, what other sorts of things did you have to unpack or start to understand after leaving being in this type of education system for, you said, K through 12 essentially?
Yeah, first grade through 12th grade.
Okay. Yeah. So were there any other parts of this Christian education that you had to unlearn or relearn that you just weren't prepared for?
Yes. basically everything except for like algebra. The past 12 years, 11, 12 years have been like almost exclusively spent unlearning and relearning everything about the world. And that really started with I went to college, I went to a public university, and I got involved in Campus Crusade right away and had some not great experiences with them. And so I kind of distanced myself from that community and ended up making friends with people who were not Christians or not actively involved in any type of ministry. And that, coupled with one of my older brothers came out as gay in my freshman year of college, those two things just completely, like, everything started to crumble, everything I learned. And once I started to ask questions, I had to keep going. Like, I couldn't stop. And so everything from biblical literalism to abortion to homosexuality to sex and gender, race, everything. And there's still things that I don't quite understand and that I'm not comfortable talking about. Like, climate change is something that I just don't understand, because for the majority of my life I was told it wasn't a thing.
Right.
So yeah, it's everything.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what I mean, that's what I find so interesting about the fact that your contribution to Exposed Christian Schools and the hashtag in general really, you know, was able to be so powerful is because it reveals the sorts of deficiencies that this type of Christian education gives to its students.
Right. Yeah, I've really started doing a lot of introspection and self-education on race and whiteness in the last like 5 years, and it wasn't until then that I actually remembered Slave Day. And so I went 25 years of my life not thinking twice about that event, and it really starts to mess with your mind when you also think about the fact that there were so many adults that signed off on that who raised you, and that, you know, that's just, that could keep me busy for hours, but
yeah there's a lot of things to unpack there. Is there anything else that you think would be important for people that are listening and reading and hearing these stories about people's experiences within Christian schools, whether it's this sort of institutionalized racism that you just become a part of without being self-aware because you're a child at the time. And again, just as you said, there are adults that are encouraging this. Is there anything else that you think is important for people to know and to hear that haven't had this experience and that have just sort of been so just shocked and flabbergasted in their response to your tweet and to anything else that you've sort of seen in this most recent discussion about Christian education.
Yeah, so I would say a few things came to mind as you were asking that question. One is to believe people when they tell you their experiences, especially those people who are from marginalized groups. I've had several people in response to my tweet were just saying that it couldn't possibly be true, it didn't happen, which is kind of silly.
Mm-hmm. Especially when you showed pictures of from your yearbook.
Whatever, like, it's hard to believe something you choose not to believe. So,
yeah.
Listen and believe people when they tell you their experience. Accept that you don't know everything and that you're probably wrong about things. And if you're going to start exploring what you were taught, and if you're going to start unlearning things, make sure that you have a network of support, because it is, I'm hesitant to use this word, but I'm not using it lightly. It can be traumatizing to unlearn all of this. Mm-hmm. And it's really scary, and you need to have people around you who are willing to support you in it. I'm a therapist, so I'm biased, but I would say get in therapy.
Yeah. Yeah. That's very important for a lot of, for really becoming mm-hmm. healthier when you're doing something as heavy as trying to question what you were taught. Yeah. Well, Laura, thank you so much for sharing a bit about your life and for really working to expose this sort of thing, because that is very much something that I think a lot of us can do after the fact and can help to sort of move these conversations forward. And that's by bringing these things to light. So I commend you for doing that. And I'm sure that it was sort of an emotional roller coaster seeing it spread as far mm-hmm. as it did.
Yeah.
I'm glad that it did, and that it's educating people, even if it is bringing out some trolls and everything as well.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Can I also just recommend a few books too?
On the
topic of race and white supremacy, just so that I'm not centering myself.
Absolutely.
Carol Anderson is she's a Black woman. She wrote White Rage, which I learned a ton from. She also wrote One Person, No Vote, which I haven't read, but I'm looking forward to it. I know you've had Austin Channing Brown on your podcast. She's great. And then, mm-hmm. So You Want to Talk About Race by Ijeoma Oluo. I don't think I said her last name correctly, but those are three writers, Black writers specifically, who I've learned a lot from and I really recommend.
Yes, thank you very much for mentioning those. I think that's also a major part of sort of the work of white ex-evangelicals, people, whether they use that term or not, that come from a white background and are trying to reckon with racism mm-hmm. and understanding what mm-hmm. whiteness is, and that that it's important for us to do our own homework.
Yes.
Instead of putting the onus on people Correct. Of color. So thank you very much for mentioning yep. that as well. And again, thank you for what you've done and what you've written on Twitter as well.
Yeah, well, thanks for taking the time to chat.
Before we get into the interview with Chris Stroop, I want to share this short voice message that was left for me on the Anchor app. This podcast is recorded using Anchor, which is a smartphone app that lets you record a podcast basically from your phone. One of the features allows you to receive call-ins, very similar to a radio show, but those are called voice messages and they cap out at about 1 minute. I asked for people to call in to share some of their stories relative to exposed Christian schools or exposed Christian homeschooling on Twitter and also in the Exvangelical Facebook group, and this is a message that I received. It's just a minute long, but I also wanted to give this little blurb as well to let you know that I will be soliciting feedback and calls in regards to things that I publish on this show. And if you do want to provide a voice message, please call in using the Anchor app, which is available for iOS and Android. Thank you.
I went to my church's private school from preschool until third grade. I probably would have stayed all the way through 12th grade if it wasn't for the fact that my dad found out that the curriculum taught at the private school did not meet the basic requirements needed for any state university. I was bullied really bad starting in second grade, partially because my teacher in second grade loved to embarrass me in front of the class and kind of egged on other students to just be very cruel to me. When I transferred to public school, it was a really hard experience. I had a lot of culture shock. I feel like I was very behind socially. I was behind in a lot of academics, especially science. And I found out very quickly that the homophobic slurs, which were perfectly acceptable at my private school, when I said them at the public school, that was not okay. And I got sent to the principal's office and had to call my parents.
I have in line with me Chris Stroop. Chris and I have talked a lot and done a lot of things together over the last couple of years. And I have him on today to talk about what this entire episode is really about, which is about schools, which was a hashtag that Chris started and really took off over the last weekend. So welcome, Chris, and glad to talk about this.
Yeah, always nice to talk to you.
So let's talk a little bit about the context of when you started this hashtag and what you wanted to do. Was it directly in response to Mike Pence and some of the things that he was getting into?
Yes, it was. And in particular, it was in response to Mike Pence and David French in National Review and on MSNBC pushing back and basically playing the victim. You know, doing that classic abuser shtick that authoritarians do when they reverse the role of victim and perpetrator. So this was after people had already criticized Karen Pence for working at a Christian school, which has explicitly anti-LGBTQ policies, does not allow any of the students to be gay or queer, trans, or the parents either. So I think that a lot of people didn't know that schools like that necessarily exist or hadn't thought much about it. And it was, I believe, Rebecca Klein, the education reporter at Huffington Post, who first broke that story, who dug into the documents of the school and just kind of exposed what it was like. And obviously, you know, these kinds of schools, they really are exclusionary. They're usually Christian nationalists. It's a whole system based in white supremacy. And when much of the public learned at what sort of school the second lady was working, they got mad and they got critical. And then, you know, we got this predictable whining from the right. And it was the whining that inspired me to try and start a new hashtag, Expose Christian Schools. I thought it would be good if we could get people who actually graduated from those schools to share directly about our experiences and in that way demonstrate why it's really quite offensive for the second lady to work at a school like that, where she's essentially saying, you know, there are whole swaths of Americans that don't really belong as far as she's concerned. You can't work a job like that and claim in any way to be representing all Americans.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And this is another one of your sort of hashtags that saw a lot of success and a lot of exposure. What sort of things did you see people begin to share? I know you shared some of your own experience, and those are things that you've talked about mm-hmm. before with me in different contexts. But what were some of the patterns and sort of trends that, first of all, you kind of expected because you're an insider? You went through this, you were educated in this way, but what were the sort of trends and patterns that you saw people sharing as they continued to use the hashtag over this weekend?
I saw a lot of people focusing on racism and misogyny, patriarchy, and the ways that people who are LGBTQ or simply were perceived as such in those schools were bullied, with teachers and coaches turning a blind eye. We talked a lot about the continuing use of corporal punishment in Christian schools. So yeah, I mean, for me, these are the kinds of things that I absolutely would have expected to come up. To a lot of people who haven't lived evangelical subculture, they're pretty shocking. But every time the ex-evangelical community trends a new hashtag, I get surprised by something. And so, you know, I didn't realize that there were schools that did slave auctions as fundraisers. And, you know, this one woman tweeted about how her Christian school, they actually had someone holding a whip, and every year they would auction off the junior class to the seniors, I think she said, to raise money for a particular event. And I didn't know that was a thing, but it turns out that it also was a thing in many public schools as well in the past. So, you know, there's just an example of how white supremacism is just all over American society if you begin to scratch just below the surface.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was one of the most shocking things to me. And I spoke with Laura Hagen, who wrote that tweet. And it was just absolutely appalling. A number of the things that we're sort of used to is this sort of white supremacy as theology that just is present in so much of Christian
yeah education. I tweeted about the curse of Ham because I tweeted that it was in seventh grade Bible, but then I actually began digging back through some old Christian school document that my mom saved, and I realized I found out it was an eighth grade Bible because I specifically remember this teacher, Mr. Bromer, was the one who gave us this worksheet, and I don't remember what exact curriculum it was, but this worksheet, it had just sort of basic line drawing illustrations of the sons of Noah with arrows pointing to where they went geographically, and, you know, kind of somewhat exaggerated features, particularly on Ham, who I'd have to say was, you know, really a racist caricature of a person of African descent. And so we didn't get it all spelled out in his class. And as I recall, he even seemed a little bit embarrassed to have us go through this worksheet, but he had us go through it. And no one actually said something like, you know, when Noah cursed Ham, his skin turned black. But that didn't have to be said for us to get the subtext. And then a lot of people came forth and said that they had learned the same thing. Even quite a few African-Americans said that they themselves learned that even in church or in Christian schools. So, you know, pretty horrible stuff.
Yeah. One of the other things that did seem to be a pattern was folks talking about the sort of educational deficiencies mm-hmm. they had as a result of being brought up in these types of schools, these Christian schools. What was that part of your experience as well, going to Heritage in Indiana?
Yeah, to a degree. So Heritage Christian School in Indianapolis, it's not a church school. And the church schools, those are usually the ones where and also missionary schools abroad sometimes, where the teachers have no qualifications whatsoever. And at Heritage, I guess, because it is a private school, the teachers don't necessarily have to have the teaching credential. As far as I'm aware, many of them do, and they do have advanced degrees. I don't know exactly what their hiring practices are in that regard. But this is kind of middle to upper class educated white evangelicals, that kind of milieu where it's a very weird mix of they want you to get high SAT scores, they want you to get good grades, they want you to go to college, but they try to funnel you specifically into evangelical colleges. And, you know, it's a weird mix of being well-educated in some regards and very badly educated because of ideology in others. It is more of a nuance. There's more of a nuanced discussion to have there than I've had on Twitter so far, because also I do know that the teachers that I had there, you know, as a rule, they did care about me. They cared about their students. They thought they were doing the right thing. But they were still, you know, perpetuating a really terrible system. I'm not going to say all of them were good people. Certainly, that's definitely not the case. I mean, one was eventually arrested, one of the teachers that I had, for having sexual contact with a high school girl who I believe was 14. But I'm not going to say all of them are inherently terrible people, incapable of any empathy and compassion either. It's just that, you know, they are caught up in evangelicalism, which is a variety of Christian fundamentalism, and fundamentalism is a cycle of abuse, and they are not breaking the cycle. So we learned a lot of bad history. We learned a lot of bad science. The freshman biology textbook, I don't remember what curriculum it was, but I do remember that it had that picture of a decomposed whale on a Japanese vessel that I'm sure you've seen. You probably know the one I'm referring to, where they said it was some kind of plesiosaur or dinosaur or something. It's been debunked many times, but pictures like that still get used in Christian school and Christian homeschooling biology books. On the other hand, they had AP biology, and I took it, and I got a 5 on the exam, but I really don't credit that to that teacher. He really is a terrible teacher. Mr. Terry, Stephen Terry is his name. I believe he's still there, or at least was until very recently. I haven't double-checked really recently, but I've talked to people who graduated from the school not long ago, and they tell me that he has continued to do what he did at the time, which is to waste a lot of class time on long, rambling devotionals that he would open with that he called thoughts. And he was like this goofy, apocalyptic, mystic, charismatic guy who was always trying to listen to the Holy Spirit about things, like, you know, who would feel led to stop his car and start witnessing to someone, stuff like that. So he would start off his classes and he would just go all charismatic on us, and he'd be like, "And so yesterday I had a dream, and I was before the white throne of judgment, and Christ was separating the sheep from the goats, and I was so nervous, and I was running around looking to see if any of my students were among the goats, and then I was so relieved that they weren't." And, you know, he would go on this way, sometimes for half the class time, even in AP biology, which was 2 periods. Sometimes he would use nearly the entire period on this bullshit. And both years that I had him for chemistry and AP biology. He would, in the fall, talk a lot about the sin of Noah and genetically engineering red heifers and, "Oh, look, society's starting to tolerate gay people, so obviously sin is increasing, so it's the year of Noah." And he would conclude that Christ is probably coming back this fall around Yom Kippur. So he kind of found that loophole about, you know, where it says no one knows the day or the hour. He didn't predict the day or the hour. He just predicted ballpark. And apparently, he's been predicting the rapture every year for maybe a couple decades, and he still does it. At least, I mean, again, I haven't confirmed that he's still there now, but I think he is. But at least until very recently, he was continuing to do this. And, you know, you've seen the hashtag rapture anxiety. That stuff kind of freaked me out. I wanted to grow up, get married, have sex, have a career, learn more, experience a full human life, and then I felt incredibly guilty for wanting that, because the rapture was going to happen when it was going to happen, and I had no right to complain about it. And of course, I didn't want to be left behind. That was scary. So this is incredibly irresponsible. And then in AP biology, I mean, we did the labs. We even did one with recombinant DNA where we grew these bacteria colonies and we introduced a gene that would make them glow under a black light. But he would not teach us the evolution chapters. He made us read them on our own and said, regurgitate them for the exam. So, you know, basically telling us to be deceptive. And at the same time, he would show us these, I'm going to use air quotes here, quote unquote, documentaries that taught us about young earth creationism and flood geology. One of them was Dwayne T. Gish, who is just one of the most ridiculous creationists out there. I think some of his videos are still available on YouTube if anyone wants to see exactly how ridiculous Dwayne T. Gish is. He's the Bombardier Beetle guy, if that rings a bell.
I don't think I know that.
Oh, you got to look it up. he is just
I'll be sure to do that.
So yeah, this is not responsible teaching. So science in particular was weirdly taught, I would say badly taught. Science there and learn things, sometimes no thanks to the teacher, even a couple of AP classes. And yet you had all this ridiculousness going on at the same time. And I mean, even when I got into college, I felt like it was morally incumbent upon me to defend young earth creationism, because I believed Ken Ham at the time that if you don't take Genesis literally, all of Christianity completely falls apart. And it's so embarrassing to look back at me in those college years arguing with people and trying to defend something so absurd, you know, and that they expect children to do this. It is abusive.
Right. Yeah. And sort of, and pivoting off of that, that's another thing that is expected of folks within the context of their understanding and teaching of history as well, especially American mm-hmm. history. That was also something that definitely seemed to be a big through line in regards to what people were sharing about their experiences. And this also extended into when folks began to speak more specifically towards homeschooling mm-hmm. and the sorts of curriculum that is used by Christian homeschoolers that is mm-hmm. primarily done through Bob Jones and Pensacola, through Abeka and other
Jones, Accelerated curriculum. Christian Education, or ACE with its PACES.
Mm-hmm. And that was that is another sort of way in which this curriculum was built to create people to argue for these cultural things. When this hashtag Exposed Christian Schools expanded and through Exposed Christian Homeschooling also began to really dive into that, what are your thoughts as far as how, especially when it came to things relative to American society, why is that important for folks that are not mm-hmm. from this background to understand?
Well, you know, the deliberate isolation and indoctrination of children in order to create a specific type of child who goes against the American mainstream and indeed against science, against democracy itself. Christian schools and Christian homeschooling were both deliberately plotted out by Christian Reconstructionists like R.J. Rushdoony himself and Gary North, and today people like Kevin Swanson. I mean, they make most of the homeschooling curriculum that's available, and it's deliberately designed to create a disaffected subculture, and also people that are so isolated that it's very difficult to get out. So it's an authoritarian environment where you've got all these disciplinary mechanisms, many of them internalized, that keep you in the fold. And so if you don't become disaffected with it, disillusioned with it, then, you know, if you do end up someone who gets the more elite version of the education, or, you know, you have the capacity, you participate in debate teams and things like that. You're highly intelligent. You're probably going to go on to become, you know, someone like Matt Staver, or work for Liberty Council or something like that, and try to fight to undermine American democracy and create a theocracy. And if you do become disillusioned, you're often kind of stuck, because this is the only social network that you have, and you don't necessarily know how to interact with the rest of society or what's normal. And of course, purity culture is a big part of this as well, and that mm-hmm. goes with the whole patriarchal aspect of it. It shouldn't surprise people. It shouldn't surprise people that the single demographic that is most supportive of Trump, that is most ill-disposed toward Muslims and refugees, engages in these kinds of extreme practices to try to indoctrinate their children so they'll perpetuate the same things. Though to do it in such an extreme way, I've referred to it as a kind of massive social experiment that they've now subjected generations to, particularly ramping up from the 1980s, shows them feeling this kind of cultural defensiveness. It was kind of a tactical withdrawal from society in order to send us back out to attack and take over, take dominion. And of course, because America is so ridiculously deferential to any expression of religion, they get away with a lot. They get away with taking tax dollars to teach things that are patently, demonstrably false as science and history. It's malpractice.
Mm-hmm. And I want to also focus on, since you brought that up, I want to focus on the reaction to this, the way in which some conservatives online have tried to
the whole conservative public web schools is, and the is sorts losing of things its that, collective shit. It's kind of amazing. All these little fly by night conservative websites and blogs, but also the Daily Caller. The Daily Caller specifically wrote about me.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And so let's talk about that and I want to tie these things together. The way in which folks that haven't experienced this have need to understand what's going on, and also to understand and respond to the conservative response, which has tried to give this response of exposed public schools and this not all Christian education sort of response, and why that is mm-hmm. either intentionally deflecting or just not the right sort of response to
it. Is intentional deflection, I'm sure, in many cases. I'm sure it's quite cynical from the people behind the Daily Caller, for example. And also, I actually found where a lot of the talking points that you're seeing from people pushing back were hashed out, planned by trolls on 4chan. I found the 4chan subthreads where they were saying, oh, let's try expose public schools, expose Jewish schools, expose Muslim schools. This kind of whataboutism is typical of authoritarianism. And I've got a big thread on this on Twitter about how authoritarianism relies on post-truth politics to maintain the status quo, to stay in power. And we've seen this in so many striking ways under the Trump regime. You know, Giuliani on TV literally saying truth isn't truth. The use of alternative facts, just throwing all kinds of ridiculous conspiracy theories out there. What that does, it undermines people's sense of a shared truth, of shared facts. And if you have a society that's so divided like that, you can't agree on whether to trust nonpartisan institutions, whether to trust science, universities, things like that, you're able to pretty much maintain power and do things that you couldn't do if you were relying on good, generally accessible information. If most of the population was able to accept the same set of facts. It's really quite insidious. And Christian schools and Christian homeschooling have been doing that for well over half a century now, but particularly since the 1980s. That's when it really got big. And I kind of like to say that, you know, in evangelicalism, which created this whole parallel subculture with parallel institutions, parallel information, we've been doing alternative facts since before it was cool, right? And, you know, then Kellyanne Conway went on to, you can actually said alternative facts.
Yep. Yeah. And that just provided a name to something mm-hmm. that we've been experiencing for our entire lives. Yeah. Well, I'm glad that you took this opportunity to respond and create something that broke through and trended on Twitter in the United States for a couple of days and continues to see this sort of slow burn,
which is great. And it looks at a hashtag over a 24-hour period. And so it peaked at 170,000 tweets in a 24-hour period. Overall, there are probably around 200,000, I would think. So it really is remarkable. It's also been written about in the Daily Dot, and maybe it will get more media coverage. But yeah, things like this, you should expect a lot of pushback from conservatives because they're angry that they can no longer control the conversation. And we have, again, been so deferential to evangelicals in most of our major media outlets. You know, they've been very effective at spinning things their way. And the ex-evangelical community is starting to break through and change the conversation. And that's really important, I think, if we're going to save American democracy, and that's not hyperbole. And you know, we saw a powerful example of that when Wheaton's Billy Graham Center had one of its so-called GC2 summits on church abuse, and they were trying to appropriate and tame the Church2 hashtag and strip it of all its anti-patriarchal critique. And the ex-evangelical community pushed back loudly. Emily Joy, Samantha Field were some of the main organizers there. Charlotte Henderson wrote a blog post. And so they organized this counter event, and the news coverage took our side into consideration. Ed Stetzer didn't get the glowing press that he's used to being able to get. He's used to being able to be quoted uncontested anytime he wants, you know. He's still giving us the cold shoulder, but he knows mm-hmm. that he's lost control of the narrative. And I love to just imagine him sitting by himself fuming about it.
Well, that's exactly why things like this are so important. And I'm glad you took some extra time to talk about this a little more.
Yeah, absolutely. I know that some people this evening are going to start making a bigger push for exposed Christian homeschooling again. And I did help organize that, as I'd heard from a number mm-hmm. of people that they wanted to participate in exposed Christian schools, but they were homeschooled, so they didn't really know if they could or should. And I think it is part of a single conversation that we need to have about educational malpractice on the Christian right. I also didn't expect it necessarily to expand into Catholic schools, which do vary widely, and many Jesuit schools are rigorous, teach evolution, and you don't have to be a Christian to go there. But people did, particularly because of Covington, you know, start using it to talk about Catholic schools as well, which is great. But yeah, the homeschooling is... Mm-hmm.
Covington, of course, being the reference to Covington Catholic students
right.
mocking an indigenous person over this
but
weekend.
Homeschooling is usually done by evangelicals, though sometimes Catholics too. There are fundamentalist Catholics for these kinds of purposes of indoctrination, and it generally involves, you know, not only inculcation in extreme cis-heteropatriarchal norms and ideals to be defended at all costs and also white supremacy, even if you don't say it out loud, but also quite a bit of deliberate misinformation being taught as fact. So it's one conversation, it's a continuing conversation, mm-hmm. and it's good that we now have exposed Christian homeschooling as well. And I hope that one will trend quite a bit too. Of course, you tend to get a lot of pushback when you criticize homeschooling. That's largely a result of the work of the Homeschool Legal Defense Association, which is an extreme right-wing evangelical organization. But some people don't understand that and think it's a legitimate pro-homeschooling lobby. It was founded in 1983, and thanks to the work that they've done, homeschooling is almost unregulated, or even if it, on paper it has fairly good regulations, they're not enforced. In states like Oregon, for example, there are things that you have to do, have your students take certain tests. But, you know, I've heard stories of people not doing it, and nobody ever showed up to enforce the rules. And in other states, they don't even have those mm-hmm. rules. So regulation of homeschooling has been completely dismantled by radical right wingers who sell fear that, you know, there's no legitimate reason to oppose homeschooling. And really, this is just all about evil liberals who want the state to take your kids away and convert your kids into being statists. CPS is out to get you. You know, they don't care about children's rights at all. It's really that whole umbrella of authority thing, absolute authority of the father over children. And it's horrible, and it needs to be exposed. So, you know, they've got so many loyal foot soldiers out there, and so many people who just get extremely defensive about homeschooling that it's become very hard to criticize homeschooling. And those people show up. So when a state tries to pass just the slightest bit of regulation of homeschooling, they get people out to the state house, and they don't leave until they shut it down. But again, this is something where over time, if we change the conversation by amplifying the voices of survivors, we do it loudly enough to get the attention of the media, they'll lose that kind of influence. And I think we might be seeing that happen here. At least with exposed Christian schools, we definitely broke through. Exposed Christian homeschooling also got mentioned in the Daily Dot article. I was contacted for it. Just right in time to where I could mention exposed Christian homeschooling because we were planning to launch it then. So breaking through into the public eye is how we collectively can start to change things.
Absolutely. And I want to thank you for starting that hashtag and for encouraging people to use it. Where can people find your work?
Thanks, Blake. So I have a website at chrisstroop.com. And there are some links there to some of my other work, although that's those sections of the site are a bit outdated and I need to update them. But yeah, I've got a blog there. I've got a resources page as well. I write a lot for playboy.com. So you can find me there on religion dispatches, including in its new incarnation, if you will, at rewire.news. I've written for Foreign Policy and other outlets. And on Twitter, you can find me at C_Stroop, STROOP. I'm pretty accessible and reachable on Twitter. I do public speaking gigs. So if anyone wants to book me, you can DM me on Twitter or you can use the contact form on my website. And I guess that's about it.
And that will do it for today's episode. Thank you for tuning in to XV Extras. Please check out the main feed by searching your podcatcher of choice for Xvangelical. You can find me on Twitter at BR Chastain. You can find the show on Twitter at XvangelicalPod. And you can support this show and the other work of Xvangelical at patreon.com/XvangelicalPod.